This is On Drive.
I don't understand what the problem is here.
With Carmichael Dave, Katie Christensen, and Nate Goodyear.
New morning, team.
Put the top down. Rev your engine.
Say, what goes on this morning?
Welcome to The Drive.
I don't know if I want to say, wow, I really respect that about you, or if I want to say, gosh, that is so stupid.
Come on, man. Wake the up. The Drive. The Drive.
He needs to shut his mouth.
Here we go with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
That keg is almost tapped.
Yes.
And they're going to get every last drop out of it.
Broadcasting live from the Coors Light Studios. Coors Light, with great beer comes great responsibility. Now the drive continues with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
We appreciate you joining us at 7:05. It is the drive. Dave, Katie, and Nate, 339-1140, 1-800-912-1140. It's draft day. Your thoughts, your questions, your hopes, your dreams. You can also text us at 44-1140. Dylan Lupton will join us at the bottom of the hour in studio. The newest member of NASCAR, and he is from Wilton, California. That's just outside Sacramento. I believe there's a big, giant nudist colony there, if I remember correctly.
Oh. Wait, hold on. Is like the colony is big and giant, or the nudists? Big, giant nudist colony?
Wouldn't know that. Well, where like they only allow like giant
people.
You have to be 7 feet.
Yeah, it's like the big and tall store for nude people.
Yeah, I think it's just the big colony.
Okay.
Questions for you guys. Here's the scuttlebutt that's going around right now on draft day. It's always a fun day, too. It's not just the draft. It's all the different things that can and can't happen. You remember last year, everyone was freaking out. All these moves are going to get made, and, like, nothing happened. There's like, it was so quiet last year. It was just absolute freaking crickets. I get the feeling with the cap situation changing so much this year, this is going to be a wild, as Johnny Carson used to say, just a wild day of picks, which of course means absolutely nothing, because somebody reminded me yesterday, we've had the Old Takes Exposed guy on, this guy on Twitter that goes around, he's phenomenal, who basically embarrasses people in the media for things that they tweeted out when you have super hot take. It was June 28th of 2012 when I tweeted this. Jokes aside, guys, the Kings got, in all caps, Thomas Robinson. Great value pick. Second time in 3 years they got a stud at number 5. Today was a good day in Sacramento. Woo! The Nets are trying to move.
But in all fairness, that kind of tells you what the NBA draft is.
I mean, I guess. Like, weren't you kind of a table for one on that one?
On Thomas Robinson? No, I was just going to say, there was that. He retweeted two of my tweets yesterday because he was going through. It was that, and then it was a tweet where I said, hey, seriously, participate, guys. Who's excited for George Karl coming to Sacramento?
And he
did. And it was a retweet or a favorite. Retweet if you're excited, favorite if you're against it. I think it was 835-21 of people that were excited for George Karl. And in the case of Thomas Robinson, no, everyone was with, not everyone, but and it's not with me. I wasn't the only one saying it, but it was a highly positively reviewed pick. Thomas Robinson at the time was a guy who was projected to be a top 3 pick who fell to 5, and we got him. What a steal. Same with Ben McLemore. There was a point one time during that year where Ben McLemore was a possible number 1 pick. Number 1.
Yeah.
So
we suck at this.
You just don't know. You know, listen, when you work in the business and your job is to have opinions that you throw out there, you're going to look stupid at times,
well,
for sure.
I mean, if you insist on keeping them on Twitter for everyone to see,
well,
all
I'm not
going to
delete them.
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't think Old Takes Guy has come after anything you've said on the radio yet.
No. Well, yeah, if I just don't use Twitter, but I like using Twitter.
That's fine.
It's a fine tool. Just
point it out.
You guys
You're
are
a fine tool.
You guys are Vlade Divac. Congratulations. Nate, you look more like him with the beard. Katie?
Well, she's got the height. I've got the face.
I think
so
if
maybe
you guys
got
merged,
like a...
Yeah,
okay.
You'd be like a weird-looking Vlade. The new... The
hands clasped.
Formerly New Jersey, now Brooklyn Nets, are looking to move Thaddeus Young. All they want to do is get in the first round. And they will move Thaddeus Young. They just really want that contract out of there. Thaddeus Young is making $12 million next year, $13 million the following year, and a player option for just under $14 million the year after that. Is that something you look at?
For the 8th pick?
I would imagine in that case, I'll throw out a deal to you. Thaddeus Young, or excuse me, the number 8 pick and Ben McLemore for Thaddeus Young.
Number 8 pick.
I think that's too much.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I like Thaddeus Young, though. I mean, I think he would be a good fit next to DeMarcus too. I think he's more intriguing than Ryan Anderson, but that's just me. Because I saw that too, and I thought, you know, I don't know if I would want to give up an 8 pick, but boy, I would see what I could do to get that guy.
Reportedly, the Charlotte Hornets are looking to trade the number 22 pick in the draft. But as part of that trade, someone would have to take on, they would insist on you taking on either Spencer Hawes or Jeremy Lamb as part of the deal. Now, what's intriguing about this, first off, can we just
bring back Spencer?
Yeah, can we just all agree that Spencer Hawes isn't happening?
Yeah.
That would be the most tone-deaf move this franchise perhaps has ever made, and that's saying something. Jeremy Lamb makes $3 million next year, and then he's a free agent.
Oh. So why? Okay. Like, I didn't know that because read the exact same thing. Got to take on one of those two guys. Like, Jeremy Lamb must have an awful contract for some reason. But...
Would you trade Ben McLemore for Jeremy Lamb in the number 22?
Yeah.
Would you trade Rudy Gay for Jeremy Lamb in the number 22?
No, I don't think it's.
Well, could I package the 22 and the 8 to move up to grab Buddy Hield? Because then probably.
I mean, that's the thing. You've got more ammo.
I mean, if you also talk about if you think Jaylen Brown's going to be there at the 8, I've seen a couple of mocks have the Kings taking him. If you're going to draft Jaylen Brown there, he's clearly your small forward of the future.
Sure.
You may as well bail on Rudy now.
Sure, but you don't know if he's available at the 8. That's the big gamble.
Mm-hmm.
Would you trade Ben McLemore and Costa Kufis McLemore and Kufis for Jeremy Lamb in the 22?
Yes.
Okay.
Would that work?
Cap-wise?
Oh, I guess the cap is so high.
Yeah, exactly.
Like everything works.
You got room.
Yeah.
All right, finally, Atlanta is looking to move up in the draft. They have the number 12, and now through yesterday's trade, the number 21 picks in the draft.
Yeah, they're really trying to trade that number 12 pick, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Would we all be in agreement that you would trade the 8 for the 12 and the 21? Or would you disagree?
I disagree because I don't think the draft is that deep.
I think in this draft, it's kind of after the top two, it's a big question mark for everybody.
So why would you want two of them?
I don't think it's like a horrible...
I mean, I guess if the alternative to having two rookies is to replace one of those guys with like a modest veteran.
Guys like Kawhi Leonard.
A veteran who's like,
right,
I'm like, okay. I'm a decent player.
You know,
right,
like,
yeah.
Guys like Kawhi Leonard who, you know.
Say some stupid crap sometimes.
Yeah, seriously. Guys like Kawhi Leonard.
Guys like Kawhi Leonard who a lot of people weren't very high on in the draft. And San Antonio has had a reputation for finding the value.
So you're just saying play the numbers.
In later
doesn't
picks.
Matter, 12, 21, no. Whatever. Play the numbers. One of them's got to be decent.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, we get so caught up on the numbers, like draft picks, like how high they are. It's I'll take this higher pick and get these, you know, I'll give up this higher pick and get two lower picks. That seems like a less common thing or a less popular thing to do. But if you get two solid players that you've done a good job in your scouting department of finding what's going to work for your system and you develop them, and usually kind of guys that go later in the draft anyway, they're not young guys. They played a year, you know, like 2 or 3 years in college. I'm like, okay, maybe they're a little bit farther along. Maybe they'll be able to make more of an impact early and less of a, you know, a project.
I would trade the 8. I would trade the 8 for those two picks, and I would do something. If I had the, do I take the 8, or do I go, if you go the 12 and the 21, then it's very possible that Wade Baldwin and Denzel Valentine are in play at both those picks.
Mm-hmm.
If that was the case, and you're asking me if I had a choice between Buddy Hield, who may not even fall to 8, by the way, to be clear, probably won't.
But if he does,
Scott, if he does.
Scott Pollard was on Grant's show yesterday, and referred to Buddy Hield as a more athletic Jimmer Fredette.
Oh, and you know what?
He does not like Buddy Hield.
Scott Pollard has been
he's Nostradamus.
Shockingly
Wait,
good.
Hold on. Like,
at
wasn't the problem with Jimmer Fredette
that he wasn't athletic?
Wasn't athletic?
Yeah, his issue is that When he played Villanova, he got completely shut down. He said Buddy Hield cannot create his own shot.
That's a load of crap. But I generally trust Scott, but dude, I've watched
Scott's
Buddy
literally.
I mean, that's insane. Like, he knows that. We watched Buddy Hield create his own shot all year. Villanova was a great team, and like, Scott was totally right about Thomas Robinson against everyone else.
And
well, I mean, you know, you didn't have to go out on a limb for Jimmer
and Ben McLemore.
Like at this
point, went to Kansas.
Yeah, and I definitely trust his opinion
Thomas
on the Kansas guys.
Right.
But I mean, at some point, like, are there any players that Scott does like?
See, that's the thing. I would have no problems if Scott Pollard is the Nostradamus of drafting and all he does is be right on players he doesn't like. Well, that's at least that's
a
help.
A skill.
It's an absolute help. I mean, he's been dead on, so that scares me. Like, people are like, well, why are you soft on Buddy Hield, Dave? Well, because Scott Pollard doesn't like him. I mean, really, that's about 90% of the answer right there. Scott doesn't like him. Sorry. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, hey, Dylan Lupton is going to be in the building here very, very shortly. But first, Katie's got something behind her ear and in her craw. We'll mix it up next on The Drive Sports 1140 KHDK. A sale. Took me a second.
Love this.
AWOL Nation.
Wait for it.
I love it.
Wait for it.
No, we'll be waiting seriously
for
like 30
while.
More
yeah,
seconds. Yeah, it is sale. People recognize that.
Yeah.
Monster Energy's Aftershock Music Festival is coming. There it was. October 22nd, 23rd, Discovery Park, featuring Tool, Slayer, Avenged Sevenfold, Korn, Primus, Disturbed, and more. Tickets on sale now. More info, aftershockconcert.com. It is draft day. We've been drafting, and we will continue to draft talk throughout the program. Coming up in just moments, by the way, in studio, Dylan Lupton, who is set to drive the NASCARs. Well, he's been doing other NASCARs, but the
yeah. drives a NASCAR.
I passed him on the way in.
Did you?
Man, it's depressing.
What?
He's so young.
He's a baby.
Wait, but he's like 22. I thought you were making a joke.
No, I passed him on the left.
Like a room for
no, I passed him in the hallway.
Yeah,
I passed him in the hallway.
Okay.
He's he's not the tallest guy in the world, but you can tell.
You can't be to be a NASCAR driver.
Not at all.
Like,
and
I could
check
never
him into
do
the
it.
Wall and be like, you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing,
right?
Brother.
I looked at him. I was kind of, hey, we used to, hey, how you doing? Hey, how are you doing? Kind of thing. Passed him in the hallway.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
I want to get into our little, I got a little something
well, okay.
to talk about.
Let's mix it up then right now. What are you waiting for?
Everyone loves a good deal.
What is your cholesterol level?
Especially when it comes from the heart.
I assume it's awesome, since the alcohol constantly flushes it out of my veins.
Let's mix it up with Katie Christensen.
One shot, you're gonna love my nuts.
Hey, that's you.
Hey, one shot.
What are you mixing, kid?
It's the Draymond Green of radio right
now.
Okay, so I don't know. Did you guys hear Ben Affleck on Bill Simmons?
Yeah,
kind of.
New show on HBO yesterday, Any Given Sunday. I didn't see it, but it blew up the internet.
Yep.
So we got some sound from it, right?
We do.
Okay, let's give it a listen, and then we'll get into this.
Ben Affleck was asked about by Bill Simmons, the debut of his HBO show last night. They got on Deflategate. Of course, Bill and Ben both being
Bostonians.
Yeah, it's Deflategate.
Right.
As if it wasn't the like very first thing
saying,
that they talked about.
That was the subject.
Wait for it, Nate. We'll get your thoughts. Let's just hear the sound first before we make any decisions.
Here's Ben Affleck on the NFL domestic violence and Deflategate.
We haven't done anything to address this crisis in domestic violence in the NFL, but the football better not be 8% lighter. And if we find out it is, you're gone for four games.
Here's Ben Affleck on Eli Manning and what he does with footballs.
Eli did a whole layout with the New York Times, a whole cute spread 2 years ago about what goes into an Eli football. And it was like a lot of massage, a lot of sandpaper, a lot of grit, and a lot of grass before Eli was like, the whole thing was about how he's got to scuff it like Phil Negro before he'll ever put the football in a game.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, and nobody even thought to think that there was something wrong with that. They printed it. It ran. Everyone loved it. Goodell thought it was charming.
Couple more quick things here real quick. Ben Affleck talking about Deflategate and why Tom Brady was suspended.
And by the way, if the NFL had a real testing, if really knew how to test for steroids and HGH in the
NFL,
there'd be no NFL.
Right.
So instead, what they did was suspend Tom Brady for 4 days for not giving them his cell phone. That's and for having a friend who called himself the deflator.
Well, why wouldn't he give him the cell phone, Ben?
I would never give the organization as leak prone as the NFL my cell phone so you could just look through my emails. First thing they're going to do is leak this And I don't know, maybe it's funny,
mate.
Lovely sex messages from his wife. Maybe Tom Brady's so classy and such a gentleman that he doesn't want people to know that he may have reflected on his real opinion of some of his co-workers.
You know,
like guys he plays with, guys he plays against, his real feelings. I wouldn't want guys who I didn't think were very good to know I didn't think they were very good. I wouldn't want guys who I thought were great to know I thought they were great. I'd want to keep my opinions to myself.
Katie?
Well, and the funny thing is that one of the great quotes, and this is, you got to keep in mind that both of these two are huge Boston people, right? Maybe the biggest. It didn't have any curse words. They didn't have to bleep any of it out. So I'll just read it to you. We're running our greatest player ever through this mill of humiliation and shame, which is totally unwarranted for the sake of our own bruised egos and our embarrassment and to paper over our mismanagement. So, you know, you got to put this in perspective when you're looking at who these two people are talking. And by these two people, I mean Ben Affleck, who talked 99% of the time, and Bill Simmons just kind of sat there and at, was loving every second of it, of course, because this is his first show, right? Which is supposed to be this big thing. And, you know, he had Ben Affleck on, who a lot of people, when you listen to the whole interview, you're like, is this man drunk? He is slurring his words, and I don't know if it's because every other word is the F word, so they're just running together.
Well, part of it is that he's had so much Botox he can't even move his mouth anymore without crossing his legs.
So
there was so much thought, by the way, to your point, Katie, that Ben Affleck was drunk because of the slurring, that Bill Simmons last night had to tweet out, by the way, we taped Any Given Wednesday, that's the name of the show, and the late morning, Ben got fired up about Deflategate during the conversation. That's it.
Yeah, so, but it's funny because while you're watching it in the background, there's like this bureau that has a bunch of like scotch and whiskey and all this stuff in it, like real classy in the crystal, you know, decanters and whatnot. And they're having water, of course, at the table, but whatever.
Sure.
I mean, draw your own conclusion of what he was fired up.
It looked like something that would be created if Donald Trump had my income and tried to create a man cave. That's what that set looked like.
Nate, I know.
So we know how Nate feels about the set.
I know you have a thought on this. Let me give you one last Ben Affleck quote here from last night.
This is a conspiracy of people working inside the NFL who all come from organizations that Tom Brady whipped their ass over the last 10 and 15 years. So there's guys who work for the Jets and the Broncos and everybody else who are now going like, get him, hang him. You know, because they have some slight flimsy pretense. And Tom is so classy.
So you agree it's a smear campaign?
It's a ridiculous smear campaign.
That's not a drunk guy at all.
No.
But here's, as I'm listening to it, I have my own opinions on Deflategate. And this thing has drug out for so long. And I'm like, okay, I like to hear other people's opinions on matters. I keep in context what it is. So you've got to take in context the Boston homerism here. But it made me think, what do you guys think in the sense that is this just about Goodell trying to legally obtain ultimate power so that whatever decision he makes cannot be challenged? Or is this about football and its integrity? And is there any integrity left?
Nate,
we
got 30 seconds.
There's no question that it's about the first one. I mean, he's right about all of that. What I'm stuck on is that I think that Patriots fans are the only people left that care about this. This is a non.
And Roger Goodell.
Well, I mean, I guess like
he's pushing it.
Yeah, I don't feel like this was a topic like 6 months ago.
And, it's going to continue to be
but,
one.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, I got no love for Patriot fan, but I got to be fair here. If Goodell dropped it today, Patriot fans, they're facing their star quarterback being gone for four games towards the end of his prime.
Well, sure, HBO paid $20 million to cater to Pats fans because no one else gives a damn
Simmons.
About. Well, that's the other point. You paid $20 million to have Bill Simmons sit there and listen to a drunken, washed-up actor spew a bunch of bullcrap about the Patriots.
That's what you're saying, but in reality, we're all talking about it. It's all over the place. You couldn't have asked for a better debut show than what happened last night with Bill Simmons. We got a break, guys, because Dylan Lupton's in the other room. We can revisit this later on in the program because there's a lot more to unpack. It's The Drive. It's Sports 1140 KHDK. All right, joining us in studio, and now
we have a guest.
Full disclosure, you know, we don't talk a ton of
NASCAR, other people
or to other people in general. Yeah, but in this case, when you got a local kid, and I say local kid, because I said when he wasn't in the room, I'll say it when he's in the room. I passed Dylan Lepton in the hall a couple breaks ago, and it just made me feel bad about my life because here's this kid. He's a kid. He's a young, I mean, he's in his early 20s. He's an adult. But look how successful he is already. And he's just beginning.
He's already more successful than you.
Very much so. Than all of us. Well,
and
maybe
what?
Not
You're
you.
Like 18 years older? Still,
I'm a little bit older than him. But from Wilton, California, and racing in his first Sprint Cup race this weekend at Sonoma Raceway, it is Dylan Lepton. Dylan, I'm Dave. That's Katie. That's Nate. Hit the little blue button underneath you there. There you go. How are you, buddy?
Good, thank you. Me on the show today.
Hey, we appreciate you joining us, and we have a lot of stuff to cover here. I'll start out with a tough question for you. I wrote this down. A critic once said about you that you were fearless with not much talent, and that was your mom said that.
I was like, where is he going with
say,
this?
Geez, Dave.
Both of these guys. I didn't tell them what I was going to ask you before, but that was not about your. You're racing now. I think that was another type of racing.
Yeah, that wasn't four wheels. That was two when I was younger. Yeah, I had no fear and not much talent to go with it. And those two things do not go well together. I always ended up in the hospital. Really got to know a lot of the doctors and people in the ER, which was nice. But, man, I hated visiting them every other month. So I had to get on four wheels a little bit safer.
Do you have a running tally of how many times you've been to the ER?
Too many. anything over one, I think, is too many.
So your mom, and granted, that's a mom for you. She kind
of
bucked the trend a little bit on you doing that. But then now you're on four wheels and you're going 200 miles an hour. How is she now with you? Obviously, you have talent, but there's still a worry about, you know, people get injured every once in a while.
Yeah, first when I started racing stock cars, she was deathly afraid. She would hide in the bathroom at the races when we'd start, and once she could hear the cars going around the track a few times, she'd come on out and kind of poke her head and see me on the track.
Peek around the corner.
Yeah, and I've kind of progressed at such a high rate of speed throughout the sport, moving up a class every year or so. So every time she gets comfortable with one series and the speed, I move up to the next series and go even faster. So, you know,
perpetual state of worry for old mom there.
Yeah, she'll sit on the pit box these days and kind of just stare at her phone a little bit and then kind of peek up and see that I'm doing all right. But, you know, it's a mother for you.
So how does that work, like moving up through the series? How many are there? I mean, is it similar to baseball? You got single A, double A, so on and so forth. How many levels are there to elevate? I guess what's the process of the NASCAR farm system?
Yeah, so it's almost like baseball.
Okay,
you start off at a weekly night, you know, races on Saturday night at your local track, and then you move up into the first professional sport or professional series of the sport, the NASCAR Can-Am Pro Series, which I ran for 2 years.
Okay.
And then you can move up to the truck series. From there, you move up to the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and then you move all the way up to the big leagues, to the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series.
Gotcha. All right. So how do you advance? I mean, is that like, do sponsors take notice? Is that how it happens? Or is it you win a certain amount of races and I guess you get promoted or something? How's that work?
It's a mixture between, you know, winning races, getting good finishes, and also having the sponsors. Money is a big factor in moving up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can find the sponsors and if you're running well and can find a team that has an opportunity for you to go out and race with them, then those two combinations, you know, will help you elevate and move up in the ranks.
Wow.
Local cat now driving the old NASCAR, Dylan Lepton in studio with us. I think what we're all skipping around is, when did you start making money? Like money, like where you didn't have to have a second job or you didn't have to call home. At what level do they really start giving you a little bit of cash?
Still trying to. It's hard. It's because you have to almost bring money to the table, which sponsors, you know. You
sounds go out and a get lot like radio.
Yeah.
You go out and get sponsors, and then once you have the sponsors on board full-time, then that's when you start really making good money.
Well, that's perfect leading, because speaking of, you and I are related in a sense with the there's your Bell Brothers bell right there. We're both sponsored by Bell Brothers, Jerry and Kenny and that whole crew, and I see in the Bell Brothers hat. So as you get these sponsors, what's great about that is you've got a couple of local ones, Bell Brothers being one of them.
Yeah, it's really cool that a local kid's going to make his debut at the local track in Sonoma, and I was able to get local sponsors on board. So I'm really excited to have Bell Brothers and Elk Grove Toyota on board, which, you know, they have a huge presence in the Sacramento area, so I'm very excited for them to come on board.
I'm curious, as whenever you're in any kind of sport, there's like the pros and the cons. I'm curious, from your perspective, what is the best and worst part about being in your sport?
The best is being able to go out and drive 200 miles an hour. You know, there's no bigger adrenaline rush than that. Kind of the con is just the busy schedule. You know, we're busy 36, 38 weekends of the year, so there's really no downtime at all. And you're always traveling, so, you know.
Okay, you're a good-looking guy. I can say that. These two can't, you know, because they're not manly enough to say it.
We didn't want to go there and objectify the guy.
He's wearing pants.
We're trying to have a NASCAR interview here.
That's what I do here. I objectify men, absolutely.
He's more than just a body,
so, Katie. You mentioned your busy schedule. Do you have a lady friend that maybe you have to balance that?
Oh, my goodness.
All of our female listeners want to know. he's so red right now.
And by the way, what are you doing Saturday night?
No, yeah, it's tough to have a relationship in this sport, especially, you know, if you got a girlfriend or wife that stays at home and you're traveling.
You're never
weekend.
There.
It makes it tough. It makes it very tough.
He skirted the question. So
well,
I'm
of
gonna
course
just,
he did.
I'm going to do this hard-hitting journalism right now because that's what this is.
Here's the thing. I'll tell you this much. I've not watched. I've watched enough NASCAR to know that drivers generally
pull some pretty hot chicks.
When you look at Victory Lane,
yeah.
I mean, I saw Days of Thunder. Yeah, and Nicole Kidman on there.
Talladega Nights. I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you want to just skirt on past that?
Of course he does. Let him out,
Katie.
Skirt on past.
Jeez.
Well, here's one for you. It's Dylan Lupton joining us on KHTK. Why stock cars? I mean, what when you decided to go to four wheels, was it an accessibility thing? And then on top of that, I mean, is there a rivalry between, I guess, stock car racing, open wheel racing? Is that something that you have an interest in, the crossover in any way?
When I was racing go-karts growing up, you know, I thought my path was going to go in an open wheel, go in either IndyCar or Formula One. It's tough right now in IndyCar trying to get sponsors on board.
That's more expensive, isn't it? I mean,
Well, they race less races, so per year it's not as much, but, you know, they really rely on the Indianapolis 500.
Okay.
That's where, you know, they really get sponsors to come on board and get them excited for the year. And then Formula One, it's really hard to break into that kind of sport.
Yeah.
Especially being an American driver.
Yeah, because I've always been curious. Like, I mean, there are guys that will do the Indy 500 and one. You know, Tony Stewart, I think, has done it a couple times. Am I right on that?
Was it
Tony Stewart that did both?
Yeah, flew
in. A couple of guys have done that. But it seems like generally the fans of the two different styles of racing are two completely different audiences. And so I wonder if the drivers feel the same way.
You probably ask those open wheel guys what they think about NASCAR drivers, and they probably call us all rednecks. And then. But I like NASCAR.
I mean, that's not fair.
Especially the race cars. You know, we're driving around these heavy race cars with a lot of horsepower and little downforce. So you really have to get up on the wheel and slide these cars around. And in the Formula cars, you know, IndyCar Formula One, it's more about precision and just being very smooth. And there's not much sliding at all. So I like sliding these cars around more, a little bit more interesting.
Now, you hail from Wilton. And there's a kid from Auburn who recently had some success in open wheel. Alexander Rossi is a rookie, wins the Indy 500, drinks the milk, I won't say an easier path, but more likely for a rookie to win the Indy 500 or more likely for a rookie to be able to even win a Sprint Cup race? Is there a difference in roads between the two?
You know, both of them are very, very tough. You know, you win the Indianapolis 500 or if you win a NASCAR Sprint Cup race, you know, you're a very, very talented driver and you're going to be going places in the future. So I would, you know, it's hard to say which is harder, but they're both very talented.
Well, and what's interesting is, you know, Jeff Gordon used to race around here. Rossi is from Auburn. You're from Wilton. Kyle Larson, Elk Grove. Is that purely coincidental because we're a big area, or is there some sort of, is this just kind of like a little racing hotbed? That's pretty interesting, that many pro drivers coming out.
Yeah, back a few years ago, you had to be from the East Coast, Charlotte area, or in the South to, you know, be a NASCAR driver. or to be taken seriously. But now it seems like California is a place to be if you want to become a good driver. It's crazy. Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Larson, now myself coming out of California. So I guess it's just a gold mine out here.
So, but you live in Charlotte right now, correct?
Yeah, I live out in Charlotte.
And so what brought that about? Is it just because that is the best place to be in terms of doing your sport?
Yeah, it's kind of the hub of NASCAR out there. All the race shops are within 30 miles of uptown Charlotte. And then they have a NASCAR building out there. And I also went out there to go and get a four-year degree at UNC Charlotte as well.
Okay.
Hey, what in?
Finance.
Really?
Yeah, so I just graduated in May.
So you know,
oh, my gosh.
Right.
So you're going to know what to do with your money. That's a good plan.
Just graduated.
Yeah, he's just going to make the big bankroll. He's going to know how to invest it, how to do the right thing, good for you.
Know how to finance it.
Absolutely.
Can I get into the brush a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Restrictor plates or no restrictor plates? What's your preference?
No restrictor plates. Yeah. Faster the better.
Like that. I mean, because it's just weird to me as someone that's kind of a NASCAR outsider or just a racing outsider, the idea that they would do something to so severely limit, I guess, the moves you can make and just try to keep it all in a pack like that. That's odd to me.
Well, the problem is we have to keep the fans safe. You know, if we didn't have restrictor plates at tracks like Daytona or Talladega, we'd be going, you know, almost 250 miles an hour probably. And with the little downforce we have, car gets turned.
It just wouldn't work at all.
We'll go up in the stands, and I know Kyle Larson got up in the fence at Daytona a few years back in the Xfinity Series, and the motor got ripped out of the car, and the wheels went up in the stand, so it was very dangerous. So and NASCAR tries to limit us in speed at a few tracks just so that we could have the fans be safe.
I get it, because there are those little sprint tracks. I didn't even think about that, though, right? I mean, what's the one? Is it Richmond that's just like super speedway? Or now I'm completely off. But there are those little tracks that are like half-mile ovals or something like that, right, that you have to have the race run a little bit slower, like you said.
Well, yeah, you'll go to Bristol where it's half-mile, and we aren't full throttle at all. You know, we're having to use the brakes quite a bit. A lot of people think that when we go to these NASCAR tracks that we're just full throttle the whole time and the cars just turn, but we're having to, you know, get out of the throttle, use the brakes a ton, keep our roll speed up, and then get back on the throttle, and they're sideways off the corner, so there's a lot that goes on at these small tracks.
You mentioned the danger, and obviously everyone you hear, even if you don't follow NASCAR, you hear about the events when the fans get involved. But as a driver, you've had to have had a couple scares. Is there one in particular that, you know, just really got you and terrified you?
To be honest, no.
Not yet?
No. You know, I've been in plenty of crashes, that's for sure.
Right.
In racing, it's not if, it's when and how severe, I guess. But I, to be honest, knock on wood, I've been lucky throughout my career to be injury-free. And the safety that goes into these race cars, you know, it's keeping all of us drivers pretty safe these days.
Well, and I'm like the resident bad driver here, apparently.
Oh, God, yes.
I'm not a bad driver. I'm
yes,
a fantastic
she is. No,
driver.
She's not.
I'm a little bit impatient with people, and I like to get where I'm going in a timely
rage.
Manner.
Oh, that's
horrible.
So
road
I've got to imagine.
Okay.
I've
yeah,
got to
exactly.
imagine that when you're just driving your car around to get from point A to point B,
he's honking the horn.
It's probably like, what kind of a driver are you off the track? You're not the guy going 55 in the far right lane.
I have to reel myself back a little bit after the race weekends.
Sure.
You know, I'll land in Charlotte or land in Sacramento after a race, and I'll hop in my car, and next thing you know, I'm going way too fast getting on the freeway. I'm like, wait a second. All right, there's a speed limit now on these roads. I got to slow it down a little bit.
Now, I know
you don't even see it. Like, I have trouble when I drive all the way up the freeway at 75, 80, and then I get off into the sticks, it's like 55, and I'm going 80, and it seems like I'm doing nothing.
Yeah.
I imagine if I was doing 200 all day long, it'd be a little different bird.
I know we got to be careful here because you got sponsors, but can you talk about what you drive off the track?
I drive a Toyota Tacoma.
Okay, really?
Yeah, I have a blue one actually out here that I've been driving around for the last few years.
You don't have a sports car, huh?
No
wow.
sports car. I drive something a little bit different in Charlotte, but can't say that.
but I would assume it's got a little acceleration on it.
No, it's a big lifted truck.
Okay,
so that's what I kind of stick to: big lifted trucks and. That's kind of my forte.
Dylan Lupton will make his debut this week in the Sprint Series Sonoma Raceway Toyota Save Mart 350. And this, and again, a lot of my NASCAR education comes from Days of Thunder, and that's probably not a good thing. But, you're making it. What's interesting about this race, correct me if I'm wrong, is it's almost like you play an 82 game basketball season, but three of those games, the rims go to 20 feet, the court shrinks 30, and you don't have to dribble the ball. I mean, there's the turn left, as people would say, oval style racing. This is a completely different style, is it not?
Yeah, it's road course racing, yeah. So there's a lot of upshifting, downshifting. Got left hand corners, right handers the next one. There's a lot of elevation changes, so it makes it very interesting for the drivers.
Now, when if you were to make a pie. Of a pie chart here. I'm curious. I got four categories for you, and I want you to tell us what is the most important factor. How do these rate against each other when it comes to you winning a race? The car, the team, the sponsors, and you. How important is each one, and what's the most important?
I would say the sponsors. You need the money.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, that because the money, if you have the money,
right.
You could go out and buy good cars, or you could get the good engineers, you know, hire engineers to design the cars, and then, you know, you could establish a good team and kind of choose and pick the best guys in the garage, and then you could go out and get the best driver. So money really drives the sport, so sponsors would be top of the list.
And that's kind of what I was getting. It's interesting with this is that, in every other sport, it's the athlete. It's all the athlete because the equipment doesn't change. What always intrigues me about NASCAR, for example, is it is such a – I'm not saying that you could put any driver in any car and they'd win a race, but I would imagine you could take the best driver in NASCAR, but if you put him in the crappiest car, well, he's not finishing first, and you could take maybe a lower talented driver, but if you've got the best crew chief, you have the best car, you have all that money, it's going to increase your chances quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You need the best equipment to go out and win races.
Okay, so you're from Wilton, California.
Yes.
Rumor has it that there is a nudist colony there.
Yeah, there's a nudist colony there.
To be honest, I live two streets down from that nudist colony. I've never been there, though. Never been there.
That's allegedly, why you got that lifted truck, right? Yeah. So you're above eye level all the time.
I'm just wondering, maybe sometimes they get a little sauced and they accidentally forget the boundaries, right, of the call. I don't know. Is it fenced in? Is it like the zoo? I don't know how it works.
Like I said, I've never been down there, but my buddy's dad, he used to deliver pizzas part-time, and he had to deliver a few pizzas there, and I guess there's a combination of a nudist colony and a senior citizen.
Yeah!
Oh, that's fantastic.
Senior citizen living.
That's when you're older, you should be able to do whatever the hell you want.
Of course.
Whatever the hell you want. If that means walking around without your clothes on, more power to you.
Just like a zoo.
Wrinkles and pizza.
Pay a couple of bucks for admission. You can have some camel spit on you. It's perfect.
All right, so we're getting to our stupid questions of the segment because we're almost out of time here. And this is one I think all dumb people like me want to know. You're in a vehicle for a long time. You are going at insane speeds. There's got to be times when your heart is going up and down and left and right. So what precautions do you take, or do you take precautions? Bottom line, how do you pee? I always wonder, how does that happen? Do you have a little, dealie, Bob? Or
personally, I've never had to. You're in a race car.
Really? Yeah, how much do you sweat out in every race?
Okay, so it's about 130 plus degrees in these race cars.
Oh, yeah.
So you're sweating profusely, and a lot of drivers have kind of weighed themselves before and after the race, mm-hmm. and they've lost 10 to 15 pounds of water weight.
Oh,
so
my God.
You're sweating out so much that you really don't need to go to the bathroom. And at 200 miles an hour, you aren't focusing on your bladder.
Right.
You're focusing on, not crashing.
Do you have any sort of AC or cooling system? Do you have water in there?
There's a coolant system. It's almost like a little refrigerator, and it sucks in the air from outside, and it goes through a hose and goes into the top of our helmet.
Okay.
However, after about five laps, you don't feel that really at
yeah.
all.
And then what about water, hydration?
There's water. I use a Camelback that has a heat shield wrapped around it. Some drivers just use water bottles, and once they're done, they toss it out the window.
Do they get a ticket for littering?
Yeah, wow.
No, you'd be amazed, especially at like the circle tracks, at all the water balls down on the bottom of the track, because they just throw them out the window under caution, and they all kind of build up on the bottom by the wall.
Right.
What number are you driving this weekend? People want to know.
Number 93.
Number 93.
Yep, the year I was born.
Wow.
Oh, like wow.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Wow.
You didn't see that on the sheet?
No.
I was going to ask you what you were doing in 1993.
I was graduating high school in 93.
I think I got my first bicycle.
I don't like this anymore.
In 93, I was a freshman in high school.
My goodness gracious.
We're all old. You make us all feel old.
Yeah,
I mean, Dave is old. I mean,
shut up.
Yeah.
You're 35. That in woman years. That's
I know. It's like dog years, right?
Childless.
I'm like really like a
7-year-old
woman.
80.
Right. Wow. See where he just went right there? My goodness.
Yep. Baron Katie.
Baron Von Christensen over here. You have any superstitions?
No superstitions. No. Yeah. I don't have any rituals or superstitions.
Nobody got time for that.
I put my shoes on however you line up.
And, whichever one I grab first.
Gloves, all that. I don't have any superstitions or rituals.
How about the night before the race, though? Like, do you have a meal? How do you hydrate? I mean, when do you start race preparation physically?
Okay, so I already started hydrating myself. I drink Pedialyte, actually.
Okay.
That helps a ton. So I'll drink a few of those before the race weekend. Usually before the race, I'll go out and get a big pasta dinner. Just kind of load up on carbs. And because usually I don't like to drink a lot of water or Pedialyte on race day, because then you're having to run to the bathroom right after the national anthem while we're trying to get in the cars, and it's just a hassle.
Well, all right, so I had a question, but then Jay threw me off.
You got it?
Do NASCAR drivers have, like, nutritionists like other athletes?
The teams do.
Okay.
Some of the teams do, because these pit crew guys, they're like ex-college football players, and these guys are huge. they're working out every day, and they're doing pit stop practices every other day probably. And they have nutritionists that are on them pretty hard.
Wow.
You know, they say, when I've asked on the radio before, how do I get into racing, and a lot of times people will say, you got to pick a driver. You got to pick a driver or a team, and you kind of go from there. So it's nice having a local kid making your debut this weekend. Obviously, the Bell Brothers, that helps a little bit as well. Even if you promoted every other place you went but us on Twitter, we forgive you. We forgive you for that, because he gave us a half an hour in here. You can follow him on the Twitter machine. That's at Lupton Dylan, correct?
Yes.
On the Twitter. They got to get you verified, too. You're big time now.
I've been trying to. It's just...
Nah.
Yeah.
You'll have it.
They don't just
by Monday.
Give those out to anybody, apparently. I'm not verified, but these two morons are.
Yeah, you're not?
No, I'm not.
That's weird. Grant's verified. Okay, well, if he and I are verified,
Dylan should be
verified.
You know what the trick is? They verify people with a business email that is attached to your account.
No,
I guarantee you by the end of next week, he'll be verified. Once you do the NASCAR racy thing, you know, out there, you're verified. Well, good luck to you, buddy. We appreciate it. Come back and visit us. Even though you live in Charlotte, when you're in town, open mic. Come and let us know as you go up the ranks to become a superstar.
Yeah, thank you for having me today.
Yeah, thanks.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. NBA draft the whole last hour. It's the Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.